So you were talking about in this Gold Dragon restaurant,
yeah.
You
Gold Dragon
have an extension, put up the dragon room.
We put on the, added the name of Gold Dragon Confectorant.
Confectorant,
yes,
okay.
It's a confectorant, a confectionery store,
uh-huh.
combined with a restaurant. You
uh-huh.
see, the combination of the two,
mm-hmm.
kind of unique.
Uh-huh.
Special, you know.
Uh-huh.
In this gold, in this dragon room, everything is modern, pre-Oriental modern,
mm-hmm.
where high, tall mirrors
mm-hmm.
slapped against the wall, and people run into it, thinking they're going into
another
room,
room,
and
uh-huh.
actually it's mirrored,
uh-huh.
and we have a stage. For about a 6-piece orchestra, regular stage with curtains and everything.
It's
a orchestra, a little
American
stage.
Orchestra.
Yes, uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
No Chinese uh-huh. orchestra those days.
And is any dancing hall?
Yes, you can dance, but
uh-huh.
it's a small room. It,
uh-huh.
The room itself holds about 75 people. No.
So do you usually have entertainment every night, or was just,
no, just
rented
special,
for special occasion?
Special occasion.
Uh-huh.
And we have a modern louvered chandelier, long chandelier
uh-huh.
with a bamboo pole
uh-huh.
and a gong hanging in the middle and
I
two
see.
Strikers hanging like that
I
for
see.
Decoration.
Wow.
No, so that's modern. And the ceilings and the walls are painted.
Was that very good business?
Yes, well, you wouldn't say a thriving business, but we entertain or have small service clubs meet there, you know, like the 20-30 Club and the Exchange Club and the Lions Club meet there, see. So
did
we have regular weekly meetings there.
How much would you say you made every month from that restaurant? Yeah, monthly at the beginning, say 1928.
Oh, you mean how much gross?
Gross income.
Gross income, yeah. Or perhaps
roughly.
Yeah, roughly about 23,000 dollars
a month.
A year.
A year. Okay. And
out of the dragon room, you know.
Right. How about the depression? Did depression actually affect the business?
Depression really hit us hard. Really hit us hard. We had to cut the prices down very low in order to survive. But I managed to carry through because I was working at the theater at the same time.
The theater pay you the same part,
yeah, yeah,
even
yeah.
if it was during the
mm-hmm.
depression.
Yeah, during the depression. We carry through, and although they cut my salary too during the depression.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, they cut.
So did you have to support your family, like your brother went to school?
No, no.
Because your father was able
yeah,
to.
We were independent
mm-hmm.
with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody for their own, watch out for their own, and. And I carried the Gold Dragon until about 46, like I say, and turned it over to my brother-in-law.
Uh-huh.
And he carried from there.
Uh-huh.
But in the meantime, around 46, I acquired a photo studio.
Uh-huh.
I was fascinated with photography about that same time,
mm-hmm.
so I bought an old studio and take portrait pictures.
Uh-huh.
And between my wife and I, we managed to run this photo studio. And we hire a receptionist.
Uh-huh.
We take care of the front while we shoot pictures in the back,
uh-huh.
and
nice.
Work in the dark room.
Uh-huh. Printing.
And, yeah, printing, and then we got to start growing with the photography, you know, and And then we got the contracts to make highway maps for the state highway commission. Yeah. So make big maps, 4 by 6 foot maps, you know. Mm. And then we go hire a plane and take aerial pictures.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And then make aerial maps.
Uh-huh.
And then very hard work, because we have to cut the map, cut the photograph. We have to back the photographs, mm-hmm. the maps, the mm-hmm. whole map,
mm-hmm.
Large map, with a piece of linen,
mm-hmm.
and then cut the cut out sections of the map,
uh-huh.
so that we can use it as a hinge and compound fold.
Uh-huh.
Into a small package, 4.5 inches wide by 22 inches long,
uh-huh.
and so that they can take this pack, one map in the package, and put it in the pigeonhole in the office.
Mm-hmm.
See? So when we do that, we have to make 22 maps, because there were 22 district offices of the state highway at that time.
Uh-huh.
So every time we make one map, one big map, we have to make 22 of them exactly the same.
Every individual, you have to do it.
Yeah, I have to cut the bulky part of the map out,
uh-huh.
so that we can use it as a hinge to fold and compound fold
uh-huh.
into the package.
I see. So did you have to travel to do this job, or you just hire someone to do it? This is for the state of California, the
mm-hmm.
whole state.
We send it out, you know, when we get the package, we send out.
And then you just do the processing and
well, everything right here,
mm-hmm.
yeah. We have sometimes we have to hire the plane and take it up.
Was that a big contract, though?
Mm-hmm, yeah. That's
when was that?
That was around 46, 47, 48, 49.
Every year you have to do it, or?
Sometimes they do it. 2 or 3 times during the season, or it depends on what
uh-huh.
project they have in the state.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Did you actually go into the bidding, or you just referred to?
It seemed like I'm the only one in town that would do it.
Is this for the San Luis Obispo County, or for the whole
state? The state highway. And at the same time, we were running a photo finishing plant.
Mm-hmm.
Photo finishing plant is where we process the roll film.
Mm-hmm.
If you drop a roll film down at a newsstand or a drugstore, you know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and you get it the next day,
right.
okay, we send a man out
mm-hmm.
every evening and pick up film from the different locations
mm-hmm.
and bring it in and work the crew. I have several workers who work in the evening, the printers and developers, you know, and process these roll film
mm-hmm.
and print the pictures and sack them up, put them in the envelopes, you know. And the next morning, another man goes around and delivers it.
Oh, I see.
So,
so you already
so we had
thought of that concept.
We were the only one around at that time who was doing processing. So
mm-hmm.
we have really had the monopoly.
Ah.
And so we kept that going for several years until we got tired of that. And
how many years was that?
Well, that was we started at the very beginning doing that, you know,
uh-huh.
from 46 to 54 or something.
So you had the Photoshop up till 1954?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, I see.
And then, let's see, 9 years, 46.
55.
Yeah, about 55 or something.
Uh-huh, okay. What's the store's name?
The store's Lewis Photoshop.
Uh-huh. I see. Where was it located?
Lewis Photo Studio, right?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It's located right next to the old mission, where the Monterey Street runs into the old mission, you know, down on Choro Street. Run into Choro, dead end at Choro Street.
So Monterey and Choro.
Right there. In fact, Monterey Street almost runs into my studio.
I see. Did you own that store
property,
or you just rented? Yeah.
Renting the property.
Was it very expensive to rent?
No, very expensive. I don't think we paid more than $90 a month, $85, $90. Very cheap.
So did you get more profit out of the photo business than the restaurant business?
I think we threw away more profits than anything, you know, by just don't know enough about the business and making bad prints and things of that sort. And just a waste, you know. If we were more careful, we'd make more money. However, that was just a sideline to me, so.
Was that better business than restaurant business? Did you enjoy more, or?
I don't know. I imagine it's
different.
About the same. You can lose just as much by throwing away a poor picture and don't make the profit that you should be making, or running a restaurant and don't know the cook the right to food and goes into the garbage can.
Right.
It's the same deal.
Same deal.
So it depends on how you're scrutinizing your work. You know, if you're careful, you make the money.
After 1955, what other sideline did you pick up, or you just concentrate
when we gave up the studio downtown because the building was dilapidated, and then they were going to rebuild the building. But they didn't do it. When they tore it down and they found out that the city rejected the application and wouldn't allow them to rebuild on the same foundation, so that building had never appeared again. So we moved our activities to our home here at 350 Lincoln. And in the room that we were sitting, you look up there, you see screw eyes along the wall and the ceiling there.
Yes.
Where we hang the drapes.
Oh, I see.
And we put the models, whoever, you know, right there and do schoolwork. Graduation pictures
photo,
and then big camera sitting here and shooting at an angle here. And we would do hundreds and hundreds of
graduation
photos. And then I have a dark room, I activate the dark room, and between the two of us, we turn out a great amount of work, you know.
So you still continue your photo business up to later days.
Yes, and we gave up photography about 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, is that right?
We were actually doing all the work right here in our home here. And didn't have to run the studio, which is all right because we can shut down when we are tired and we. And continue when we have the energy.
Oh, that's neat.
But in the studio, we have to have somebody there, you know, receptionist, open up 8 o'clock in the morning and until 6 o'clock at night, whether we take in any business at all or not.
Well, back to your regular job, the projectionist, you work about 6 hours, 8 hours a day?
Well, at the theater.
The
theater, we call one shift. That's 6 hours. If you work over that, they pay overtime.
So usually you just work one shift, and that's
one
it.
Shift a night, and sometimes, if necessary, I work from 2 and 3 shifts during the weekend. You know, Saturdays, Sundays.
Yeah.
we have midnight shows, we work an extra 2 hours.
I see.
And that makes 8 hours for the evening, you know,
uh-huh.
6 hours and 2 hours overtime. Mm-hmm. And if I have relief men, why, I'll let them take over a shift or two.
I see. When did you work for Freema, start working for Freema?
It was the same company who owned those three theaters at the same time.
Elmo, Freema.
The Elmo, and the Obispo Theater.
Uh-huh.
So whenever I was, of course, when I was a, I still am the chief projection, so I have my choice whether I don't want to go work in the new theater or not. So.
Oh, I see. So you're a chief projectionist for this big company. What's the company's name?
Well, it's been changed hands so many times.
I see. Uh-huh.
First it was the Far West,
uh-huh.
and then changed to the National Theater,
uh-huh.
and the General
uh-huh.
Theater Corporation,
uh-huh.
and the Far and the National Theater and Television came in about that time,
uh-huh.
and now it's taken over by the Mann Theaters.
Oh, Mann Theaters.
Mann Theater chain.
You
heard of the Mann
yes.
Theater down in
uh-huh.
Southern California, hundreds of them.
I see.
So the company is now owned by 700 or 800 theaters around
yeah.
the country, clear back to Minneapolis,
uh-huh.
Minnesota.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah,
so besides running running the projector is always the same, or you have some adapt to the new machine from time to time? New
usually the same setup.
Uh-huh.
The machines never change.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I don't mean they never change. If the new innovation comes in, you know, like first we operated as a normal picture, and then CinemaScope came in
uh-huh.
and we had a wide screen, you know, and
uh-huh.
and. Todd A.O. had a big square screen, you know, so it changed. We move from time to time.
So you just learn the
learn as you
to adjust.
Go, you know.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm.
So did you also show, run the projector for other people, private party? I remember reading the article.
We do work for non-profit organization. You know, I run pictures for other shows, you know.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And non-profit, I just run the show for them.
Uh-huh.
And put on shows for them and entertain groups, you know, just for the...
How about the, like, Hearst, Mr. Hearst?
Oh, you mean up in the Hearst Castle?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Well, I was... I got acquainted with a taxi driver
uh-huh.
years ago, and at that time, the Hearst owned a lot of property, something like 36,000 acres, and you know, run for miles from along the coastline, clear up to Monterey County, into way up Big Sur, up
mm-hmm.
that area. Well, anyway. William Randolph Hearst, the son of the original H.R. Hearst, camped up there, and
uh-huh.
and he likes
up where?
Up there at San Simeon.
Uh huh.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
San Simeon.
Okay.
Near there,
right.
You know, up in the hills,
uh-huh.
Above San Simeon,
uh-huh.
He decided to build something up there, you know,
uh-huh.
and of course they have to travel by train.
Mm-hmm.
I think you remember, mentioning traveling by train.
Right.
So when he comes into town to want to go up to his ranch,
uh-huh.
he would hire this taxi.
Uh-huh.
There's only one taxi in town at that time,
oh.
you know, and he only one car, perhaps.
That was about 1919.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's the time when I got acquainted with this taxi driver.
Okay.
Anyway.
Uh-huh.
And so that taxi driver would take Mr. Hurst up to
uh-huh.
his,
to town.
He it's not a small town, very small town, maybe
uh-huh.
only one store in that
uh-huh.
town.
Uh-huh.
And he takes him up to the ranch up there, and
uh-huh.
he, Mr. Hurst would pitch a tent. He liked to sleep outdoors, you know.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
He liked to rough it
uh-huh.
outdoors.
I see.
So, and, but when, sometime Mr. Hurst would need some provision to, you know, supplies or things from town here, and the taxi would be called to
mm-hmm.
take it up to him, you know,
mm-hmm.
buy it in town, take it up to him. So this taxi driver and I got pretty well acquainted, and
uh-huh.
So I ride up with him
uh-huh.
just to keep him company.
Uh-huh.
And then when he started to try to build something, and I didn't know at that time, didn't know what it was,
uh-huh.
and so he was staking out some ground up there, you know.
Uh-huh.
I would hold a tape line for him, keep measuring this and that, and, you know. And you know, I didn't know what I was doing. I wasn't inquisitive enough to find out what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
To hold a tape line, I just hold a tape line for him, and he measured it out and drive stakes and helped him out like that.
Uh-huh.
But not until I didn't know who he was. In
You're
fact,
right. uh-huh.
he's just somebody living in a tent up there. That's all. You know, sits somebody in a tent.
Uh-huh.
Didn't know who he was.
Uh-huh.
And so, not until later I found out that he was William Randolph Hearst.
Uh-huh.
He wanted to build a castle up there.
Wow.
This was 1919.
Uh-huh.
1920 went on, things start to grow.
Mm-hmm.
He's beginning to hire people up there to start to build, you know, artisans. And then fancy work comes in, you know, statues and one thing or another like that, you know, ornate work, you know. And Julia Morgan was a designer, you know, and she was hired to come up and map out the castle for him,
mm-hmm.
start to build. This went on for about over a year before I found out he was William Randolph Hearst, who was
uh-huh.
building a castle.
Oh.
and then I got to pretty friendly with Mr. Hearst, you
uh-huh.
know, and he liked me very well, and I didn't know it until way afterward that he liked me so well. He said if you ask him for $50,000, he'd give it to you. Ooh, too bad I didn't know. Anyway, we were very friendly.
Uh-huh. So later years, he was...
Yeah, in 1925 is when I... he in this complex, this castle complex, he added a little theater in there for his help,
mm-hmm.
for himself,
mm-hmm.
for enjoyment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A small theater with a seating capacity of about 50. Large
mm-hmm.
orchestra seats,
uh-huh.
about 50 people,
uh-huh.
and with a little stage and
uh-huh.
a curtain that disappears, you know, goes down into the ground
uh-huh.
and level with the stage. So
uh-huh.
if there's any entertainment, boy, it'll go on without any obstruction. And so
you help him design.
Yeah, I help him. No, I didn't help him to design
okay.
at that time, because it was, I figured it wasn't my business to
uh-huh.
do anything in that line, because he had his own strict ways of doing things.
Right, uh-huh.
Very meticulous. And so he designed the theater, and he asked me if I wouldn't run pictures when sometimes when.
Uh-huh.
So he had a mistress up there, by the name of Marianne Davies, and she had. He tried to make her a star, see, so in the silent days. And she more or less successful in being a star.
Mm-hmm.
And so many pictures were taken in a silent way. And she would get a copy of her own pictures. And,
uh-huh.
And so once in a while she would like to see what she did before, you know.
Uh-huh.
And Mr. Hearst called me up all times of the night, sometime 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, to come on up, and I wanted to see a picture or something like that, you see. And if he doesn't call, Marion would call me. Mr. Lewis, I wanted to see my picture. We've taken such and such a date or something.
Uh-huh.
And so I would have to go down into the basement and dig out, you know, this taxi driver would take me up there.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And Mr. Hearst would pay him
uh-huh.
$35 for each trip he goes up there. And then he gives me $35
uh-huh.
for running a picture, whether it's 1 hour and a half or 2 hours, you
uh-huh.
see, duration. So he give me a flat rate of $35 every trip I had to take up there. So that's the way it worked for several years. In 1925 was one of the first pictures I ran, and I ran a picture for him every so often until about 33.
Oh, uh-huh.
And sometime they had. And by this time the castle was almost complete, you see.
Uh-huh.
He'd have big parties, a lot of Hollywood celebrities, you know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Up there. You can name dozens of the old timers, and they've been there, you know, including three or four of the old presidents, you know,
mm-hmm.
Coolidge,
mm-hmm.
Roosevelt, and Harding, and a few others.
Mm-hmm. So by 1933, he's no longer interested in showing movies or?
Oh, he was. He still, he's still, but at that time, around the 30s, things were really going full, and I didn't have the time to
uh-huh.
to go very many times, so he figured that he'd rather he would hire a regular projectionist,
uh-huh.
so he got a hold of a regular projectionist that stayed there,
uh-huh.
and it was so confining. See, if you're a regular projectionist, you're on call 24 hours a day. See?
Mm-hmm.
But while in my case, I just work here at the theater, and when he needs me,
I just
have a relief man come over and take over my theater job while I go to the Hearst Castle and run a picture, which I like very much. I enjoy very much being up there and walk around the gardens when I'm not working, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so, beautiful setup, you know.
Oh, did he actually, besides pay you the flat fee, did he treat you some other nice things?
Oh yeah, well we stayed there at the castle. Sometimes I have to stay there 2 or 3 days, and sometime a week
mm.
before we come home.
Mm.
We stay at the castle.
So Marcella will go?
Yeah, she stays, comes.
Uh-huh.
Not always, but she'll come up and stay with me at the castle.
Uh-huh.
And we live like a king, because we live on the second floor where the Hearst lives, and Marion Davies, and Arthur Brisbane, which was a famous writer of the Hearst paper, and Adelaide Rogers, St. John's, you know, that uh-huh. writes today, she writes, still writes books.
Uh-huh.
And so
you would stay out there and
stay in the castle.
The maids and the servants will serve you.
Mm, I have servants around me one time, just to show how elaborate things are, you know, just like, well, I was a king for a day, you know. We went up there and it was raining and all stormy weather, and went up there and we stayed in one of the guest houses.
Uh-huh.
Guest rooms, it was in the castle,
right.
Guest rooms, and kind of a French bay window.